live on Never Had It So Good Sports Radio. A new day brings new topics. Our sports talk brings extensive debate and analysis by the host, expert contributors, and callers. We discuss it all. Join us weekdays at 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Never Had It So Good Sports Radio.
Welcome to Never Had It So Good Sports Radio. I am Princess Cooper, along with my co-host tonight, Duck Riley, and also Tim Moore. Tonight we'll talk to Coach Dom Capers. We'll get him in here in just a moment. It's Where Are They Now segment. And then at 7 o'clock we'll do men's discussion tonight with basketball, and then we'll do women's tomorrow night and recap the WNBA draft. That kind of snuck up on me. Duck Riley, how are you, sir?
Yeah, Princess. Tim is probably going to get the only one going to get something right tomorrow night.
Alexa's probably going to show up. Yeah, that's right. That's right. With the number one pick, I forgot about that. He probably will. Tim Moore, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Princess. Duck, how you doing?
Doing well, Tim.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Gentlemen, before I get Coach Capers in here, the parade was yesterday for the national champions, South Carolina Gamecock women, and it was pretty full. It was packed down there. There had to be, I don't know, 10,000, maybe 20,000. It was overwhelming, maybe more, but a very good showing for that. Yeah, it was packed for sure. So now it's time, I guess, to start another schedule and get ready for the off season. All right, let's welcome in Coach Capers to the show. Coach Capers, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you this evening?
Doing really good. Now, I'm a Floridian. Is this a Florida prefix I'm seeing here, sir?
It is. This number is from when I was with the Miami Dolphins back in 2006 and 2007.
Well, I applaud you for still having the same number. Awesome, for sure.
This number has traveled around quite a bit since then.
Yeah, 2006. Well, I don't even know where I was in 2006. Yeah, congratulations. All right, so I'm going to turn you over to Duck and Tim. I'll be back at the end. Go ahead, Duck.
Okay, all right, Coach. She had to sneak the Florida in. It's a Florida thing, Coach. So we won't worry about her.
Talking about West Virginia, Duck. Go get her.
Well, I've had a place down there in Florida since 2006. So when you spend 10 years in New England and Green Bay, it's nice to be able to in 3 hours be able to be sitting beside the pool.
See, that's what I'm talking about. You're a good man. Go ahead,
right, Coach. I want you to kind of, Coach, you know, we each got a little segment we're going to do with you, but I want to tell the audience, the listeners, how it all got started. You know, even take us all the way back to when you first started playing ball.
Well, I grew up in a small town in southern Ohio, and, of course, football is pretty important in the state of Ohio, and so as a matter of fact, not that far from West Virginia, Duck, and so I played through high school, football, basketball, and baseball in high school, and then went to University of Mount Union and played football and baseball there, and then from there I went on to Kent State as a graduate assistant in football, and just happened to. There was another guy that's pretty well known that was a graduate assistant with me there, Nick Saban. we were graduate assistants together way back when in the early 70s. And so Nick ended up staying at Kent State and coaching the secondary, and then I went with Don James to the University of Washington in 1975. And so from there I spent 10 years in college football, and of course – where we met, Duck, was in 84 and 85 with the Philadelphia Stars. And since that time, I've had – this will be my 38th year in the NFL, so I've been blessed.
Wow. Now, Coach, when you were coming through high school, did you ever imagine yourself coaching, being a coach, or did you know that you wanted to be a coach?
Well, I did. You know, I love playing and competing and – then when those days were over for me, I thought the closest thing to being able to still have the competition. And, you know, I've always loved the X and O part of the game. And I've just been so blessed. And, you know, I'm grateful that I look back, this will be my 50th year coaching this year. And, you know, I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I've had a chance in 50 years to do something that I love to do. And that's why I'm still doing it. People ask me, they say, what are you still doing, okay, at your age coaching, you know? And of course, it's very special for me to be back here with the Panthers because I can remember the first day we walked in that brand-new stadium. And I know this summer we're having a kind of a mini camp down at Clemson, which it's been 30 years since we opened up the first season down at Clemson because the stadium wasn't done yet.
Now, Coach, you brought up some interesting things. You knew you wanted to be a coach. So what steps did you take to become a head coach, which we know is very difficult?
Well, I look back, Duck, and realize that I was so fortunate to be around some really, really good coaches who became mentors for me. In the college game, you know, I worked for Don James, Johnny Majors, Earl Bruce, who all were NC2A Coach of the Year.
Wow.
And then when I moved into professional ball, of course, Jim Morrow, you know, there with the Philadelphia Stars, I'd worked with Jim out at the University of Washington. And of course, he became the Coach of the Year in the USFL. And then we went to New Orleans, and he was the Coach of the Year our second year in New Orleans. And from there, I was able to go to the Pittsburgh Steelers with Bill Cowher. I was his first defensive coordinator. And the very first year, Bill got NFL Coach of the Year. And then, of course, my second year here with the Panthers, okay, I was able to get Coach of the Year. So I just think that, you know, like in any profession, you learn from the people you're working for, and you study them and try to understand what's made them successful, and then you try to apply that to your own career. And that's where, you know, being around so many great coaches and so many great players, okay, that I've just been blessed that way.
So, Coach, from each stop, did you take something from each one of the coaches that you worked under to shape your philosophy?
Well, I did, you know, and I think like all of us, you know, different coaches have their strengths and weaknesses, but it doesn't take long if you're working for them to see what enabled them to become head coaches. And, you know, I think it's like anything. When you're a secondary coach, okay, you're studying the coordinator and trying to figure out what the next step would be for you to be able to become a coordinator. And then when you become the coordinator, then you're studying the head coach because that's normally the next step. You know, I was so fortunate, okay, when Bill Cowher took the Pittsburgh Steelers job back in 1992, that was my first opportunity to be a coordinator. And, of course, we had great success there the first 3 years, the Panthers were happened to be putting together their organization and had the great opportunity to come down here, you know, as the first head coach.
Okay. Coach, my other couple of questions before Tim jump in. How difficult is it to pick a coaching staff, especially when you have a plethora of network?
Yeah, it's to me, that's the single most important thing. Is you've got to get a group, okay, that can work together, that's going to be on the same page. And you know so many people, and obviously there's no shortage of guys that want to coach in the NFL. And so you've got to make sure that you get guys that you study their background, okay, and what's enabled them to be success. And then you got to find guys. It's like putting together a good team that, you know, you can't have a lot of big egos, you know, guys that are going to put their ego aside and work for what's best for the group. And, you know, my first time of doing it was here as a head coach, but when I went to Pittsburgh as a coordinator, we had an unbelievable staff there. You know, Marvin Lewis, coached our linebackers, John Mitchell coached our D-line, and Dick LeBeau coached our secondary, and of course, Dick's in the Hall of Fame, and Marvin was a 15-year head coach with the Cincinnati Bengals, and John Mitchell just retired here a year or so ago, but he was there for well over 20 years. So there's no doubt in my mind that our ability to have success was based on those coaches, okay, and their ability to work together. And, you know, you got to get guys, you spend an awful lot of time together, so you've got to get guys that enjoy being with each other and look forward to coming to work every day.
Okay. Now, the most important part of it, Coach, you know, you bringing in X amount of players, and you got to let some players go. How difficult is that for you?
Well, to me, that's the single most difficult thing that you have to do as a head coach, because, and it's especially difficult when you've got guys that are doing everything that you're asking them to do, or maybe that they've been with you for, you know, some other place, or with you here for a while, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have to, hey, it's just a fact of life in pro football that you have to cut down to a certain number, and you start out with 90 guys, and the rules only let you keep 53 on the team, and to me, that's the most difficult thing, is being able to call guys in and explain to them, okay, why you have to make those decisions.
Okay. All right, Tim?
Coach Capers, first of all, I am so excited. When Doug told us that you were going to be on the program, I was so excited about this because I have followed the aspects of your career. But in doing the background, I had no idea how spectacular your background is with the people you've been exposed to. Let me start, first of all, by mentioning Mount Union, a program that in the past couple of decades has really sort of dominated D3 football to a large degree. You went there. Just want to mention that I was a Wittenberg guy, so I'm somewhat familiar with that conference from way back in the day. Kent State and Washington with Coach Don James. I've heard a tremendous accolades about Coach James. We have a guy who comes on our football panel, Donald Jones, who played for him at Washington. Talk to us a little bit about the brilliance of Don James as a coach.
Well, that was one of the great breaks for me, Tim. And before we talk about that, I'll just tell you that I was kind of made my decision between Wittenberg and Mount Union, and back during my era there, Bill Edwards was kind of dominating Division III before Mount Union dominated it. And, when I went to Mount Union, my mother wanted me to go to Wittenberg, to be honest with you. And so I ended up deciding to go to Mount Union, and my first roommate when I went there was Larry Karras, who became the head coach of Mount Union for 28 years and has the best all-time winning percentage in college football history of any division, because in 28 years, I think he only lost 24 games, which is phenomenal. But a great break for me, Tim, was getting to be with Coach James. And I'll say this, that to this day, he might be the most organized guy that I've ever been around. It just made such an impression on you that every time you went on the practice field, you were thinking about that staff meeting the next day when he was going to critique everything, and you didn't want to get called out. So you were going 100 miles an hour. Kent State doesn't have a great football legacy, but he went in there and won, and had people like Nick Saban, okay, who played for him and coached for him. And then when we went to Washington, he ended up being at Washington for 17 years, and I think that they finished first or second in the Pac-10 in 13 of those 17 years, and he ended up winning a national championship, I think it was in 1996.
Right.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
So he's
Coach.
He's had he's got a real tree out there in terms of guys that have coached for him and played for him and coached for him. And I think they would all tell you the same thing about Don. You know, he was the ultimate professional and organized, and you had to have everything in order, okay, when you coached for him.
Oh, fantastic. Coach, you mentioned you were there with Coach Cower in his first year as the head coach at Pittsburgh. And one of the ball players that always intrigued me, sort of a trendsetter on the defensive side of the ball, was Lavon Kirkland from Clemson, the linebacker, big guy. He was one of the first really big, speedy linebackers that, run sideline to sideline. I think it was like 250 or 260 or something like that. Talk to us a little bit about how unique a player he was at that period of time in pro football.
Well, Lavon is one of my favorite players. You know, when I was the coordinator at Green Bay, I had Lavon come in and work for us as an intern there for a period of time. But I remember back when we drafted Lavon out of Clemson, and we also drafted another young man by the name of Chad Brown out of Colorado. And these were two outside. They were two outside linebackers in college, and we decided that we had Kevin Green and Greg Lloyd at the outside linebacker positions, so we were going to put Chad and Lavon at the inside linebacker position. And I'll never forget the first rookie camp that we had coming in. They hadn't played inside linebacker, so when they were running the ball on offense, those two guys were dropping, and when they were throwing it, they were rushing, you know. So it was but it didn't take them long because they were both great athletes. And Lavon was amazing because at his size, 260 pounds, he really was light on his feet and he could run. Yeah. And I can remember vividly, all right, where we would ask him to run with a tight end up the middle of the field, and he'd be running stride by stride with him at 260 pounds, which is very rare. You don't see that very often. But smart guy, really good player, and obviously at his size, you know, he was a beast inside there filling his gap, okay, in the run game.
Yeah. Yeah, Coach, you talked about that coaching staff, Steve Furness, Marvin Lewis, Dick LeBeau, and yourself. We've had debates on this program in the past with guys, and I sort of cringe anytime people start talking about best ever anything. But, there have been a lot of folks who just follow the pundits on ESPN when they automatically assign best cornerback ever to Deion Sanders. But I remember that there have been some other really good shutdown corners in the history of the league, Mike Haynes being one with the Oakland Raiders who could do it all. But you had a guy who I think was as good as anybody that's ever played the game, Rod Woodson. Talk a little bit about him as a cornerback, if you would.
Well, Rod was a really, really special player. I mean, and you know, he was a track man and football player at Purdue, and won the hurdles in the Big Ten. You know, and Rod was a little over 200 pounds. And when I first went to Pittsburgh to interview with Bill, Bill offered me the job and I took it, the first thing I did was I spent 2 days there just looking at tape. And Rod could do whatever you asked him to do, but I ended up, because he was so fast and he had good size, and when we would go to our substitute or our nickel defense, I put him in at nickel because he would be in close to the action. And in 1993, he was the defensive player of the year in the NFL because he could rush and sack the quarterback, and he could cover anybody because of his size and his speed. And plus, he was very smart. You know, I mean, there's a couple games I remember. All right, Warren Moon was with the Houston Oilers at that time, and we blitzed Rod off the edge, and boy, he hit Warren and ended up cracking his ribs. You know, and Warren ended up missing quite a few games. And I remember we're getting ready to play Jim Kelly and the Buffalo Bills on a Monday night football game in Pittsburgh. And Rod would bait the quarterback. Okay, he would play off the receiver. And a lot of times the offenses would then audible if they thought the corner was too far off to the quick game, and they'd throw a quick hitch out there. And So we opened up the game that night, and it was a good rivalry between Buffalo and Pittsburgh at that time. But Rod aligned it about 10 yards off the ball. Jim Kelly looked out there and saw. He audibled to the quick hitch, and Rod broke on it, all right. He baited him into it. In the very first play of the game, he took it back for a touchdown. That's just the kind of player he was.
I always thought when they start talking best cornerbacks ever, I think his name gets overlooked by people who are not, you know, purist of the game. But this is a guy who not only would shut you down on the cover game, he would hit you, like you said, Coach. Tremendous ball player. Now, you coached when Duck was with the USFL Philadelphia Stars, who were, you know, obviously the class of that league for the 3 years of the league. You had a guy like Scott Warner, who was all everything in college at Georgia, came into the USFL after a short stint with the Atlanta Falcons. Sam Mills, who was a Pro Football Hall of Famer. You had a guy named Garcia Lang, who played defensive back, but also was a kick returner and had a pretty good NFL career for a couple of years as a kick returner. That team had a number of players who went on to stellar NFL careers. Kelvin Bryant being one. I think Bart Oates got a couple of Super Bowl wins when he was in the NFL. All around, talk to us about, and I know it's hard to assess, but how would that team have stacked up against the average NFL team, or maybe even a playoff level team in the NFL? I'm not going to try to say that they would have won the Super Bowl or anything like that, but how competitive would they have been in the NFL?
Well, I'll say this, and Duck probably knows this as well as anybody, but I had been at Ohio State coaching the secondary, and really the reason that I left Ohio State to go to the Philadelphia Stars is because I knew Jim Mora, and I knew that, you know, Jim was an outstanding coach, and the first year there in 1984, you know, we won 19 games. We were 19-2 and beat George Allen and the Arizona Wranglers down in Tampa in the old Big Sombrero. But as I looked at our roster, I think at one time I had counted 6 guys off that roster that made the Pro Bowl in the NFL. And we, after 85, we went to New Orleans as a staff in 86. And I really felt that the first year when we went down there that our Philadelphia Stars team was a better team than New Orleans at that time because they'd been in the league for 20 years and they hadn't had a winning season. And what ended up helping us turn that program around in New Orleans was we had a really good draft the first year. We got 5 players, that were outstanding players, but the biggest thing was we had 14 USFL players on that team, so it was like having 3 drafts in 1 year, and the next year we won 12 games for their first winning season in the history of the Saints.
Wow. Tremendous, Coach. I've always wondered about that because I remember watching that ball club and always thought they were a tremendous ball club. You were the first expansion team to go into the NFL playoffs, I think to the championship game in its second year of existence, if I'm not mistaken. That just wowed everybody, and I think they sort of changed the draft, supplemental draft rules about expansion teams because you all were so successful. Talk to us about your move to Carolina and what caused that team to be successful so quickly.
Well, it started with the kind of players we were able to acquire, and not only good players, but they were great guys in the locker room. And, we started in 1995 and 0-5, like a typical expansion team. But the thing that was great about it is we had guys like Sam Mills and Brett Maxey, who came from New Orleans. You know, I'd coached Brett for 6 years in the secondary. I'd been with Sam with the Stars and the Saints for 8 years. And, at that time I couldn't think of a better person to be the face of the franchise than Sam Mills because he was not only an outstanding player, but as good a player as he was a better person and a better leader. You knew what you were going to get out of Sam, every day. And I talk to the players now about Sam. You know, a guy that started as a, you know, he was cut three times in the NFL and got his great opportunity with the Stars, and then he ended up making five Pro Bowls, okay, between New Orleans and the Carolina Panthers. I mean, that second year when we won 13 games, he started in the Pro Bowl at 37 years old, and all three of the starters in the Pro Bowl were from the Panthers, because we ended up having Kevin Green on one side, Lamar Lathan on the other side. They were 1 and 2 in the league in sacks, and Sam was the middle linebacker. So, but, you know, I just think about those teams. For us to start 0-5, and then we won 7 out of the last 11 games, which was the best expansion record ever the first year, and the next year we won 13 games, and we're playing to go to the Super Bowl. And, you know, we opened up the Bank of America Stadium, and we ended up never losing a home game that year, you know. So the fans never left feeling bad. And we beat the Dallas Cowboys, who were the defending Super Bowl champs. And
Coach, could you say that one more time? You beat the Dallas Cowboys?
Yes, and I'll tell you this. So after the game's over, I go in the locker room and I'm waiting for all the players to come in, and nobody shows up. So I walk back out in the stadium, and they're all running around the bowl of the stadium, high-fiving the fans, and there wasn't a fan that had left that stadium. So it was kind of a magical year for us.
Hey, Coach, you couldn't beat a better team, Coach.
Coach Capers.
Of course, they had Troy Aikman was their quarterback, and Emmitt Smith was their running back, and Deion Sanders, okay, played both ways for them.
Coach Capers, that's all for my benefit, because I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. So they had to go back and say, what did you say, Coach? Dallas Cowboys, okay. I'm going to cut your mics off, Tim and Duck. I'm just going to turn your mics off.
Well, don't hold that against me, Princess.
I won't, sir. I won't.
Go ahead, Duck. I'm sorry.
Well, Coach, you kind of cleared up a lot of stuff that, you know, I'm sure, you know, Tim and everybody was kind of wondering about and stuff. My thing is, Coach, how do you keep it together, your professional football and your private life? How does that work?
Well, first of all, you have to have a good wife, Duck, because you're going to be spending a lot of time in that stadium. But no, you know, one of the things I've learned, because you go through different stages of your career, and early in my career, well, I'll just tell you, when I took the Panthers job, you know, I just said, hey, this is my opportunity, and I'm not going to leave any stone unturned. So I ended up sleeping at the stadium like 3 nights a week. So you just got to have that focus, all right? And, you know, I just feel like the speed of the leader becomes the speed of the team. And if they see you putting in the time, okay, and you do try to do things in great detail, then it just works downhill to where your coaching staff does and your players feel the same way. And you try to surround yourself with guys that it's really important to, and understand that this is as competitive a business as you'll find, all right? So you want to just make sure you give yourself every opportunity you can, okay, to play and win on Sunday.
Coach, what did you take from being a head coach with the Panthers to the Texans when you took over the Houston Texans?
Well, I think, you know, I think Tim mentioned it, you know, that when we started here at Carolina, free agency was just getting started. So it was in its infancy. And teams hadn't figured out that you better pay and keep your best players. So we were able to get a number of really good players through free agency. I mean, our second year here, we had 8 guys in the Pro Bowl. And so, you know, from here, I went to Jacksonville as a coordinator for 2 years and then took another expansion team. I'm the only one foolish enough to take 2 expansion teams. But when I went to the Texans, the league saw what had happened, all right, with the Panthers, and they made it a lot more difficult to get the free agents, and people had figured out then that if you have good players, you need to pay them and keep them because they're hard to get. And so it made it a lot harder, okay, at Houston than it was here at Carolina.
Okay. All right, we're going to bring the Cowboy, I mean, Precious in, Coach.
I'm so happy you all had that little laugh there. Coach Capers, I want to bring it forward and just talk about the NFL now, the product that you see, how they handle the draft and how it's located in one city, and it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Friday and Saturday, I think it is. Or maybe they start Thursday night, then Friday and Saturday. Talk about that a little bit, and even the combine and how they handle that in Indianapolis. Talk about the product of the NFL today.
Well, you know, it's amazing because, like I say, this is 38 years for me, and so you've been able to see it change so much over that period of time. I suppose any business, okay, over almost 40 years is going to change tremendously. But, you know, there's so much interest in the NFL. And, of course, it starts, you know, with the draft. And a lot of people don't realize that next to the Super Bowl, the draft is the most watched event on the NFL calendar. And because everybody's a college football fan and they follow the really good players. And, you know, the combine has become that now to where, you know, I can sit at home and watch the combine on ESPN, all right? And it never used to be that way. But we've got the draft coming up here, okay, in another couple weeks, you know, the last weekend in April. And we will go through on a Thursday night, all right, is the first round, and then we come back for the second and third round on Friday evening, and then they have rounds 4 through 7 on Saturday. And it's always an exciting time to see your new players and, you know, to get them in, all right, and get them started in your off-season program. You know, we'll have not the weekend after the draft, but that following weekend, we'll have all of our rookies in for a rookie mini camp. And since we're a new staff, the week of the draft, we're having a veteran mini camp that week, the week of the draft. So, it's been fun to watch, okay? I know as a head coach, I would have, you know, when you would go to the owners' meetings, all right, they would always talk about, we'll be hard-pressed to get the kind of TV contract that we have now on the next one, and then they would turn around and double it. So there's been no shortage of interest in the NFL, that's for sure.
Yes, sir, for sure. I think it's one of the best off-seasons of any major league sport, and that's the NFL. I wanted to ask you about two coaches that decided to make a difference or move away from the game for whatever reason, and that's Nick Saban and then Bill Belichick and his change from the New England Patriots. Which one surprised you more?
Well, they both surprised me. I've worked for both of those coaches. You know, like I say, Nick and I go way back, all right, to Kent State. When I left Houston, Nick was the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, and so I went over and coordinated Nick's defense with Miami, and that was in 2006. And then when Nick left and went to Alabama, then I went up with Bill Belichick and coached with Bill in 2008. So they're both two of the greatest of all times. I mean, I think that Bill would be considered probably the greatest coach of all time in the NFL, or certainly one of the top, you know, three or four, and the same could be said about Nick in college football. So they're both outstanding coaches and great people, and I learned a lot, you know, from both of them. And, they're out of my era, so, it'll be interesting to see. I know Nick's going to do some TV game day stuff this year, and it'll be interesting to see what Bill does. But I'll be interested to see if they can stay out of it or if they get back in some capacity doing something. Because, you know, you just don't flip a switch after you've been doing something for 50 years and totally, you know, change, okay, routines and all that. So it'll be interesting to me because both of them are very, very competitive.
You know, Coach Capers, I remember when they announced the Carolina Panthers as the new team in the NFL, and I remember the interest, and I was living in Jacksonville, Florida at the time, but I remember the interest all the way there. But talk about how the city of Charlotte embraced you and how excited they were to have an NFL team in their city and how you were able to get exposed to that and experience that.
Well, it was so much fun because you were just starting from scratch, and we had no players when we started out. And, of course, the new stadium was being built. So it was funny because we were working out of Rock Hill down at Winthrop was where we had our offices, and we practiced down there. And then on Saturday mornings, we would have a walkthrough, and then we would get on buses, and we would bus 3 hours to Clemson to play our home games. And the joke with the players was the only difference between playing at home and playing the 49ers on the West Coast was a hot meal and a couple flight attendants, because it took us the same amount of time to fly to San Francisco as it did to drive to Clemson.
I love that. My last question is, do you have any inside stories for me about Duck Riley with the USFL Stars?
Yeah,
I mean,
okay,
Here we go. Any special interest stories you may have?
Well, I'll just tell you this. In 1984, when we were winning all those games, okay, we were 19-2, and so at that time, the Philadelphia Eagles weren't very good. So the city really embraced us, okay? And they embraced a young fullback that we had on the team because every time he scored, okay, he had this dance that he would do, okay? And it was called the Duck Shuffle. The Duck became a celebrity around Philly from doing the Duck Shuffle, and the fans would come just to see Duck do his dance in the end zone.
I've seen some YouTube footage of it. It's in black and white, but I've seen some YouTube footage of the Duck Shuffle.
I'll tell you what, Princess, he was the man, okay? So he was a celebrity around Philly at that time. And I know Duck will remember this, okay? So we end up winning the championship game down in Tampa, and we had a big party afterwards, and then we flew back, and we had a parade in downtown Philly, which was really neat because there was all kinds of people there. Then we went home and packed up because we were flying to London the next day to play the Tampa Bay Bandits in an exhibition game in London the next weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. That was a good Duck story. I like that. Duck, you were worried, weren't you? You were like, oh, Lord, let me start praying, weren't you?
And look, if anybody knew anything, it was definitely Coach Capers, because we used to come over and mess with Coach Capers and his D-backs.
Awesome. Good stuff. All right, Duck, I'll turn it back over to you guys.
We had on that team, you remember, both of our inside linebackers, okay, made the Pro Bowl in the NFL, okay, Michael Johnson and Sam Mills, and then William Fuller, okay, made the Pro Bowl, okay, as a D linebacker.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
And look, you know, the good thing about it, Coach, most of us, majority of us still keep in touch with each other. So, Coach, you talked about traveling to Clemson, and I hear the laugh because it just kind of reminded me when we were in Philadelphia, us traveling back and forth to Baltimore.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story, Duck, okay? So, you know, I started this at Ohio State, so we were having some spring recruiting stuff, and we'd done some really good stuff at Tennessee, and I couldn't put my hand on it, so I started just copying down the day, okay, because I felt I was getting close to maybe getting a head coaching job in college. And so that year that we did that, in 1985, when we traveled down to Baltimore, you know, I kept all those notes, and I used those notes for the first year here when we played our home games at Clemson. So it's funny you bring that up, because it really helped us, okay, in terms of all the schedules and knowing that you had to travel and all the meeting times and those types of things. I think it helped us be successful that first year, because we were 5-3 at Clemson. And like I say, we won 7 out of the last 11 games. So from the time we started winning, our first win, Sam Mills intercepted a pass against the New York Jets and ran it in for a touchdown to win the game. And we won 20 out of the next 27 games. Wow. So, which, you know, was unheard of at that time.
Yeah, I just want to know, did you beat the Jets? Hold on just a moment. Did you beat the Jets in that game, sir?
We did. Oh, okay, boy. Bubby Brister was the quarterback, and he threw the ball in the flat.
Oh,
Sam picked it off and ran it in for our first win.
You made my night, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hey, Coach, Tim is a Jets fan, and, of course, Princess is a Cowboy fan. So the pot shots are going, Coach. But anyway,
I can tell you guys have a lot of fun there.
Oh, we do.
So you talked about, Princess had asked you something in reference to how do you like the way they're moving the NFL draft to each city? And what's your thoughts on that?
I think it's great, because you see, I mean, the cities are bidding on the draft now like they do on the Super Bowl. And
wow.
I think it's in Detroit this year. And,
right.
You know, a couple years ago, you know, I went up with Detroit, and, you know, one of the things I enjoy doing now is helping my guys along. You know, and Aaron Glenn, who's the defensive coordinator at Detroit, played for me in Houston. And so I know the Detroit fans, they'd gone through a lot of years, okay, and not having success. And that city was going crazy this year, you know, when they made the playoffs. And, you know, they're and really, okay, outplayed the 49ers, you know, in that championship game the first
right.
half. And so I can only imagine the enthusiasm, okay, that they're going to have there to have the draft there. And I think every city, okay, knows that they're going to have a lot of people come in, and the interest is in the draft now. So it's become a big deal in terms of bidding on getting that, and the city putting things together, okay, prior to that to try to acquire the draft, just like the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Coach, my other thing, and I don't know if you can answer how much you paid attention to it, but I'm sure you have. We know that we have the combine, but now they're starting to do the Power 5 stuff, like the Big 12 had a combine for their guys. You know, how much does that impact some of the decision-making with you guys?
Well, obviously, when you're thinking about drafting somebody, the more information that you can get, the better. But I will say this, Duck, that there's so much emphasis put on, okay, all the timing and the drills and that type of thing. But I still believe, okay, the number one thing is being able to look at that tape, and if a guy is productive, okay, during his college career, you know, that certainly enhances his chance of being productive, okay, with us. And, I've just watched it over the years. And if you're evaluating and trying to decide between two guys, you know, normally to me the best lane is to go with the guy that's been the most productive in his career to this point in time, because there is a difference between running a 40 and doing drills and playing football.
So my last question before Tim and Princess finish it up, how difficult was it for you during the COVID time, especially when you guys were trying to evaluate players?
Well, to be honest with you, that's been the toughest time for me throughout from my career because, you know, back when I started, okay, they had 16 millimeter, all right? You remember that, okay, from your playing days, all right? Then we went to Betacam, and now everything now, okay, is digital and readily available. But I've had over the last 25, 30 years some young guy that's, that's an IT expert sitting there to do a lot of that stuff for me. So the biggest thing I know about the COVID is we came back from the combine, and I was with the Minnesota Vikings at that time, and they shut the office down, all right, COVID. And I just, my wife and I had just gotten a new condo there in Minneapolis. And so fortunately, we just gotten it. So we ended up, we were isolated in that condo for like the next 3 months. And everything that we did was on Zoom. So I had to sit in front of that Zoom screen and do football and have meetings, which kind of drove me crazy because I like to be able to look guys in the eye and be able to interact with them that way as opposed to being looking at a screen and talking to them there. So and then what a crazy year that was because we didn't have any fans in our games, and we would go into a visiting city, and normally where the hotel would be packed with your fans, it'd be like a ghost town. So we'd be the only people in the hotel. We'd go to the stadium, and there wasn't anybody in the stadium, and it was just totally different.
Okay. All right, Tim?
Coach, just to shift gears slightly, you obviously have been a defensive-oriented coach for most of your career, and I know you remember how defense used to be played and how it has changed over the past few years. We go from Deacon Jones with a head slap on the pass rush to Jim Marsalis and others doing the bump and run and cornerback coverage down the field to a time now where not only can you not touch receivers after a few yards off the ball, it's hard to even tackle guys effectively with an impact hit without getting a penalty called. Now, how difficult is it to coach in an environment like that? Coaching defense, I mean.
Well, for an old guy like me that came through all those years where, you know, you coach your guys, if that ball's in the air, you got as much right to it as a receiver. And some of the best plays I've seen, you know, the DB, okay, you know, there's going to be some collisions, you know. And, of course, nowadays, you know, every rule change they've made is for the safety of the players. But it's made it extremely difficult to coach the way that you used to. Just because all the rule changes, okay, it's made it hard to play aggressive and physical defense.
Right.
You know, I was with Harrison Smith there, you know, in 2020 I was there. You know, Harrison is an old-school safety, and you know, I think he had 7 or 8 personal fouls, you know, just for going for the ball and going through, you know, what they considered a defenseless receiver, you know. And I know this, that I think when I was the coordinator at Green Bay, we had a young linebacker, okay, that was a free agent, and we were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh, and they were down on about the 5-yard line, and they ran an angle route coming in, you know, with the back, and he hit the guy and knocked the ball out, and we kept him out of the end zone. And in the film study that week, I told him, I said, you know, that was a really, really nice play. And he came back in a couple of days later, okay, with a fine, all right, that he'd gotten fined like $20,000, okay, which was his whole game check, okay, because there was some helmet-to-helmet contact on it. And I felt awful about it because he said, "Coach, you told me I did a good job, and I get fined $20,000." So those are things that have changed. Like anything, you know, you have to change with it. But has it affected the game? Yeah, it's affected the game some.
Okay, now my last question, sort of in that same vein, just your personal assessment. I have my own opinion, but of the great defenses you've seen over the years, you know, I think back to the old Pittsburgh Steelers Steel Curtain defense, the Purple People Eaters of the Minnesota Vikings, those great Kansas City Chiefs teams in the old AFL, the Chicago Bears in 83, and then the Ravens I can't remember what year it was, with Ray Lewis. And there may be others that I'm missing. In your personal opinion, what is the most impressive or intimidating defense that you've ever seen in professional football?
Well, you know, of course, the Steelers of the 70s with the Steel Curtain, you know, they had so many great players and they had such a run there. You know, I mean, you mentioned earlier about the rule changes, you know. One of their corners, yeah. Mel Blount, you know, when I was there and I met Mel, you know, Mel looks like an outside linebacker. I mean, you know, yes. He's so big. But back then, you didn't have to worry about collision and receivers because they didn't. So he could use that size and collision those guys all the way down the field. And then, of course, the first guy that I ever coached at Kent State was Jack Lambert. And so, obviously, I was real interested there because of being with Jack in college and then, you know, Pittsburgh drafted him in the second round out of Kent State. So, but, yeah, again, I've been blessed to be when we were there in Pittsburgh, okay, our third year, the year before I came to Carolina, you know, we led the league in sacks, and it became Blitzburg because we were running the zone blitz so much. And I can remember, I'll never forget this, I don't know if you guys – of going down through the Fort Pitt Tunnel there, okay, which opens up into the city and the stadium.
Oh, yeah. Right.
They had a big traffic sign that went across the road up there. And so they started putting up there on Sundays, all right, or Saturday night, because I would go home from our team meeting. And on Saturday night, they would close out the news, all right, with what they would put on that sign for the game the next day. So I remember we're playing the Cleveland Browns in Pittsburgh. And I get home, and they had it had "Welcome to Blitzburg, dog neutering, 1 o'clock tomorrow." so that was a lot of fun because all the places downtown had Blitzburg signs. So,
Coach, you mentioned that, and I have mentioned on this program because I lived in Cleveland for about 12 years. There are very few people who are not from that region who realize how intense that rivalry is. Those two cities are 2 hours apart by driving a car, and it's the only rivalry in the NFL that I know of that they don't fly to the ball games. They bus to the ball games because the cities are so close. Such an intense rivalry.
Well, I can tell you this, that during my 3 years there, anytime we played up in Old Memorial Stadium there in Cleveland, I considered it a victory if I could get out of the pregame warm-up because they always put us warming up down where the dog pound was. And I'm telling you what, they would throw batteries and everything at you. You had to keep you had to be on your toes because you were going to get hit with something now. Just hopefully it wasn't something that was hard enough, okay, that's going to crack your skull. But it was, believe me, it was a real experience. And then, of course, we would – the locker room, okay, back then, you had to get your shower early because if not, you had to stand in about 6 inches of standing water, okay, when you went through that dugout and went up to take a shower.
Oh, boy. And I'm glad you mentioned that because people don't realize in the old stadium in Cleveland, the dog pound was the cheap seats. That was the bleacher seats in the stadium. And so that's where the average fans were. And now they've made it the high dollar ticket. But back then, that was a rough place to be.
Well, they hated the Steelers, and they were going to let you know every minute that you were down there, okay, you were going to hear it.
That's all I have, Doug.
All right, Preston, you can take us home.
Thank you, Coach Capers, for just, you know, giving us, talking about your journey and being candid. I appreciate that. And We'd love to get you back during the NFL season, but I appreciate you being on and taking time to hang out with us tonight.
Well, it's great being with you guys, and I can tell you have a lot of fun here on the show, and maybe we'll be able to get a chance to do this again sometime. So, and make sure make sure you guys take care of my man Duck there. All right.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Him and he's had to retire the Duck Shuffle. He's no longer doing that, but we
might be able to get him. We might have to bring him out of retirement here sometime to do it for us.
All right.
Well, it's great.
Have a great evening,
with
Coach Capers. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Coach.
All right. Tim and Duck, we're going to get out of the way here. At the top of the hour, we're going to have men's basketball discussion, and we'll get the guys in there. Never had a so good sports radio. We'll see you in about 5 minutes.